Now it's time to check up on the top stories of the week in national politics. President Trump has declassified documents relating to the ongoing Russia investigation. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation is still up in the air as the Senate decides how to proceed after a sexual assault allegation. Plus, the U.S. and China have exchanged billions of dollars in new tariffs in a growing trade dispute.
And our question for you this week, are you concerned about the impact of the growing trade dispute between the U.S. and China? Are you worried about paying more for consumer goods? Is your business or industry being affected by tariffs? Is this an issue that could sway your vote this fall? And do you support the president's trade strategy? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
Ginger Gibson is a correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot going on this week. One we haven't talked about yet on this show is President Trump declassifying documents from the summer of 2017 related to the application for surveillance warrant of a Trump campaign advisor. They're not out here in the public yet. Can you give us an idea of what kind of documents we're talking about?
That's right. There are two types of documents, really, the president has declassified. He's declassified parts of an application to the FISA court to surveil Carter Page. And this was someone who was consulting with Trump's campaign and who the FBI believed was working with the Russians. Trump wants the reasons that the FBI gave for conducting that surveillance to become public. The second part, and that, let's add, that's really unprecedented. FISA applications have almost never been made public in any circumstance whatsoever. The second thing that he's asking is that text messages that are still in the control of the FBI that were sent by a number of FBI agents and personnel, including Orr, Comey, Stroke, and Page, two agents that talked and were conducting the Russia investigation early on, that we now know were having an affair, and have already been criticized for some of the text messages they sent in which they suggested they were going to be going after President Trump and his team. He wants those released as well. We have seen pieces of them, some of them redacted. The president has suggested that they should all go without redactions, although we are learning today that there is a continued debate inside the Department of Justice and the White House about removing some of the names in those documents.
Now, with these FISA documents, what's the argument from the administration and some of the president's congressional supporters about why they want these documents to come out?
They believe that if the public can read these documents, they'll agree with President Trump and his supporters in Congress that the investigation was started unfairly, that they used documents and information that they shouldn't have access to, that they were sort of out to get the president without real justification, and that they will be on their side. The president calls this investigation a witch hunt, and his hope is that the rest of the public will agree that it's a witch hunt if they're able to see these documents that were filed with the court.
And some Democrats in Congress have been saying, well, hold on, this is, I think, something like 20-ish pages out of 400 and some pages in this whole process, something on that order. What are we hearing from people who are disagreeing with this decision?
The Democrats have two criticisms of this decision. The first, like you said, is that this is only a tiny portion of the information that's available about this investigation and the details that are involved in this investigation, and that you would have to release all of it to get a full picture of what's going on, and that by selectively releasing just the parts that they think might look good for President Trump, that they don't really tell the full picture. The second one is that it's just too early in the process. FOIA and other public record laws protect from release documents that are part of an ongoing investigation. The logic there being that someone who's being investigated shouldn't necessarily know everything that law enforcement has on them, and that knowing that might change their behavior, might change their answers. And for that reason, historically, records that have to do with ongoing investigations have been kept secret until the investigation is over. And because the Mueller special investigation continues, Democrats argue that it would be best to keep them secret until the investigation is over.
So you mentioned there's still a process here. These aren't just going to be dumped out for the public. When do we start seeing at least parts of these two sets of documents?
President Trump has said that he wants them released before the election, which is the beginning of November, as have his supporters. But you're right, there is a debate being had about making sure that there isn't national security put in jeopardy during this process. So it could take days or weeks. We could also start to see legal objections to this. So far, there haven't been lawsuits filed to try to block them from doing so. But that is a possibility, as some of the president's critics could move to get a judge to intervene to conceal some of these documents because they're part of an ongoing investigation.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top national stories of the week. Moving on, Ginger, dueling tariffs back and forth, more of them this week and maybe more around the corner between the U.S. and China. Give us the latest on that back and forth.
That's right. The trade war was back in full swing this week. President Trump signing off on another $200 billion in tariffs on goods brought to the United States from China, and China responding with retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods that are sent to their country. There remains to be no end in sight to these two countries swapping tariffs, and it's really starting to cost the American consumer and business. Business tells me that they're feeling the pain, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars in tariffs, and they might have no choice but to pass those costs on to the consumer.
We invited our callers at 800-642-1234 on the tariff issue. Adrian starts us off in Chicago. Adrian, hi.
Hey.
What did you want to bring up, Adrian?
Hey, yeah. So I cover real estate in Chicago, actually for Chicago Magazine. Just listening in, and this is something that, you know, I'm hearing from developers. You know, a lot of concern over the rising cost of building materials. And, you know, across the country, especially in major cities, we've seen values increase dramatically just in the last few years, particularly in really kind of hot corridors and neighborhoods in major cities. As, you know, the economy rebounds and infrastructure improvements are made. But, you know, with the rising cost of labor combined with, you know, the rising cost of building materials and coupled with mortgage rates that have been creeping up, you know, I just really wonder, and I think a lot of people are wondering right now, what's going to happen.
I'm going to jump in, Adrian, and get Ginger in on this. Now, Ginger, you've written very recently about business groups being concerned about part of what Adrian was talking about there, the cost of materials. He's talking about building materials. You write people, businesses, factories worried about the electronic components that they buy from China and assemble into other products. What are you hearing there?
That's right. The concern here is that the price of just so many things are going to increase. Building materials make it more expensive to make buildings, make housing prices more expensive, make commercial building prices more expensive, which makes it so that they get done slower, which puts everyone's housing prices to up. I mean, there really are ripples through the economy that are felt even by imposing a tariff on a small handful of products, but we're talking about thousands and thousands of products. And businesses very concerned that the economic growth that the country has seen in the past year, what they say were big benefits from the tax legislation, could all be erased by these tariffs. So that if people start to lose their jobs, if companies start to spend less and hire less, then we quickly could be pushed into a recession.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson, correspondent for Reuters, looking at some of the top national political stories of the week. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Ginger Gibson is with us for our weekly look at top news stories out of Washington. She's a correspondent for Reuters.
One of those stories, back and forth tariffs between the U.S. and China. We invited your calls. Let's take another caller now. Ben is with us in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hello.
What do you think?
Yeah, my thought is I support the tariffs, and it's because I believe there's kind of a ideological double standard in that, you know, China sends a lot of cheap goods to America, and they do that by having poor labor standards and poor environmental standards. And so to me, I'm okay with paying more because I don't support the way they do things. And I believe Democrats should recognize that too, that those products have an environmental cost to them.
Ben, thanks a lot for the call. And Ginger, I've talked to people, trade experts and others, who say, okay, maybe not the tariffs on Canada and Mexico and the European Union. China is a special case for some of the reasons Ben mentioned. They don't always play by the rules, some people say. Are people treating tariffs on China differently than maybe tariffs on other countries?
The China tariffs are much more complicated. Many businesses tell me that they support some efforts to rein in China, especially because they say they're stealing their intellectual property and that it's been a real problem. And that's the justification that President Trump has used to impose these tariffs. Furthermore, you talk about it from an ideological standpoint, that President Trump is much more in line with Democrats who have repeatedly in the past called for more protectionist trade positions, who have argued for tariffs to protect some American industries, and I think almost any other Republican president would probably have found a good deal of support in Democratic quarters for these tariffs. This Republican president hasn't made an effort to win over any Democrats or to work with any Democrats, and it's a little bit trickier on the political front for a number of reasons, but it is more complicated, and President Trump himself has said that these tariffs aren't permanent, or he doesn't want them to be permanent, and that the goal would be to negotiate with China to get them to embrace fairer standards, to stop stealing American intellectual property, and then he'll happily take the tariffs back down to zero.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to John in Green Bay. John, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. And in the meantime, the average person or the average business owner who is affected by these tariffs is just supposed to trust an administration that never gives any facts or details or proof or statistics of how long this is going to take, what's going to be the impact, how they're supposed to get through it. And it's really, to me, the biggest rub in this whole thing is the party of government get out of my face and out of my business is jamming this down people's throats, picking winners and losers. And then when a company like Harley-Davidson makes a business decision because of these tariffs, he throws them under the bus as them being somehow unpatriotic and not sticking with them. The fact is he never gives any proof or statistics, and he shoots from the hip. And he's not an economic genius that we can all get behind.
John, thanks for the call. Ginger, in your reporting, you wrote that a bunch of business groups aren't just sort of vaguely worried about this. There is, it looks like, going to be an effort, a new organization of businesses lobbying and advertising to the public on some of these very concerns that our caller just raised.
That's right. Business is very much in line with the caller just now. And when I talk to them, I often hear from lobbyists and from business trade group officials here in Washington that they can't figure out what the president's plan is. I think that's the biggest frustration. If they could figure out some type of end game or plan, if they thought they understood how he saw this playing out, I think business would be a lot more comfortable giving him some leeway and accepting the president's argument that there's some short-term pain for long-term gain. But they really feel that there isn't a plan, or at least not one that could be articulated to them. And for that reason, that's why we see business putting what is now millions of dollars into trying to raise concern among voters about these tariffs.
Thanks for your calls. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top news in national politics over the last week. Now a fast-moving story in the news, the confirmation of Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. A sexual assault allegation came out. Testimony, some kind of hearing planned on Monday. It looks like Brett Kavanaugh, the nominee, is going to testify. But his accuser at this point, it seems up in the air. What's the latest on this, Ginger?
That's right. This is a very fast-moving story. There was some talk that Brett Kavanaugh wouldn't testify if his accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, did not also come forward to testify. What it appears to be conversations through her attorney, she seems to have been declining to interview until something more of an investigation is done. We're now hearing from Republicans that if she won't testify, whether in a public hearing or in a private hearing, that they're just going to move forward with voting on his confirmation. And we could take that to mean very likely that they would approve his confirmation, as they seemed on track to do before this story came out over the weekend. But I suspect Republicans are looking for a way to make it seem that they've given this accusation as much vetting as they can, and then looking for a way to get him confirmed as quickly as they can before the election.
Yeah, we heard Christine Blasey Ford, via her attorneys, had said she was willing to talk to the Senate. Republicans are saying, great, we've got this opportunity Monday or never appear to be the alternatives. Democrats saying, hold on, why is that particular day so important? There's a lot of wrangling about the when and how of when and how she would testify.
We've heard criticism from Democrats throughout the entire process that Republicans were moving too quickly. The calculation seemed to be that Republicans were trying to get a vote before the election to be able to go home to their base and say, look what we accomplished, look what Republicans can do when they're in charge. And Democrats were trying to get to their base by saying, look what we can make a lot of noise about, even if we can't stop it. But sending more Democrats will allow us to stop it. So the timing and the speed of all of this has been a point of debate the entire time, and this is now adding to it, with Republicans still wanting to move very quickly and Democrats trying to slow the process down, especially now in the wake of these allegations.
And you tweeted that political observers should be thinking about women going to the polls in November and whether they have the perception even that an accusation of sexual assault here was swept under the rug by one party. What are you watching for in the politics of this?
In the politics of this, I think that political observers in Washington and New York are making a grave mistake in underestimating just how angry women are across the country. I know when I talk to voters outside of the Beltway, I am just hearing an immense anger. And we've seen it so far at the polls and primaries and the number of women who have run for office and have turned out to volunteer and are trying to influence the system. I think voters, women voters particularly, were very unhappy with Donald Trump and the Access Hollywood video. And when he got elected, it sort of, they thought it wasn't possible. And then when it became possible, it created this anger. And this is only going to feed that anger. It is not going to subside it. If women think that a victim of sexual assault isn't being listened to, that she was being disregarded, that she was being not believed from the beginning, and that someone would get a job like this after having been accused of that. I think that we cannot underestimate how much anger is already out there and how much more anger this would add.
I want to touch briefly on another issue. Later in the show, we'll talk about a U.S. Senate opioid bill, actually a series of bills that were just passed in the Senate. You wrote earlier in the summer, this opioid addiction story, this is an issue for voters in a lot of places around the country.
It is. And we're seeing it in some of the hardest hit areas. It's been something voters have been talking about for a while. I wrote the story. I went to a district in New York in the winter, until it was snowing when I was there, and talked to voters who were wanting and demanding answers from elected officials. This epidemic has hit so many places in the heartland, in the Northeast, and voters want government to do something about it. This legislation now, I think, is an effort, but the criticism is it's not enough of an effort. It's not enough money. It's not enough research, and it's not enough treatment.
We'll have more on that legislation coming up in about half an hour. Ginger, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is a correspondent for Reuters. She joined us for our weekly look at national politics. Still time for you to share your thoughts on any of the issues we just talked about and our question in particular about tariffs between the U.S. and China. What do you think? Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know what you think.